Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever.
Hi, I'm Mick McDonald.
And I'm Samantha Delgado.
And we're the hosts of the V Foundation for Cancer Researchers' Voices for Victory podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
Each episode, you'll hear stories of how cancer has affected the lives of so many people and how the V Foundation for Cancer Research is fighting to achieve victory over cancer. We'll speak with folks who have been touched by cancer in some way or leading cutting-edge cancer research, and sometimes both.
In Jim's famous ESPY speech, he said there are three things in life that are most important to him: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. We want to find out what prompted our guests' dedication to beating cancer, what they're up to now to support it, and where they see cancer research going in the future.
And today, our guest is the CEO of the V Foundation, Susan Braun.
Susan has spent decades as an advocate for cancer research, and today we'll chat with her about how she first decided to get into the field, what excites her most about the work being done by the V Foundation today, and where she sees the future of cancer research.
And now, our conversation with Susan Braun.
And I always have to think about what's important in life is to think to me of three things: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. Those are the three things that I try and do every day.
And we are so lucky to be joined today on the Voices for Victory podcast by Susan Braun, the CEO of the V Foundation. Susan, thank you so much for stopping by and joining Samantha and I.
Hey, Mick, it's a pleasure to be able to be here with you.
We're so thankful to have you on. And where I wanted to start was you've had a long career in the cancer research field. I'm just curious how you initially got started and decided that was going to be kind of the path that your career was going to take.
So early in my career, I had gotten a position at Bristol-Myers Squibb in their oncology group. So I was beginning to learn about cancer and about cancer research and about how patients are treated for cancer. And then not long into that, my time there, my college roommate was diagnosed with breast cancer. And sadly, very shortly later, she died from her breast cancer, leaving two small children. And it broke my heart, and it also got me really angry. And I recognized that I just needed to do more. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do some programs with patient advocacy there at Bristol-Myers Squibb. And through that, got to meet folks at the Komen Foundation, which was a small regional organization at the time. And they invited me to come and be their CEO. So I did that and recognized through that work from start to finish the importance of cancer research, and really met so many of the researchers in the field. And then through the years that have led me to other places, I've always stayed engaged with helping raise funds for cancer research and also granting those funds wisely. And now recognize that she would very likely have lived with the diagnosis she had, if it were now and not 30 years ago. And that's because of the progress we've made because of research. So it is doubly important to me as I look forward to think of how many people right now might be in those shoes and how it is that we might be able to be saving their lives.
And I think, Susan, it's interesting when you bring up the changes in research over all this time. And it takes me back to Jim's ESPY speech, right? You know, it may not save his life, but the work that the V Foundation could eventually do would hopefully save someone else's life or save one of his children's lives. And I think that kind of motivating factor has always been a big, you know, push for anyone who's working in the field, specifically those of us with the V Foundation.
It really is. And also, so many patients who enroll in clinical trials say that even if it doesn't save their life, they want to be a part of what might be helping others in the future. And as you know, clinical trials are the form of research where patients are involved in testing what is the best existing therapy compared to something that is new and most likely improved. And it is always very heartening to me to hear patients talk about why they've been willing to enroll in these clinical trials. And so much of it is to help save perhaps their own life, but definitely to save the lives of others in the future.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I don't think it's something that a lot of people really think about. It's almost a selfless act. If you think about it in that sense, they're putting themselves through these clinical trials so that hopefully someone in the future will benefit from it, and hopefully they will too. So that's such a good point and something to really think about. And Susan, I'd love to know what really attracted you to the V Foundation. What about their mission really drove you to want to lead them into the future?
Well, a lot of things have made me both be interested in and continue to be just delighted by the V Foundation. My first living memory is actually being on a basketball court with my father, who was a high school coach. And so basketball, and especially college basketball, have always been a part of my life growing up. And although Dad was a fan, Mom was the diehard fan. And so we had, especially during March, of course, and March Madness, and then the NCAA playoffs, and especially the finals in April, that's what our TV was always tuned to. And of course, this is in the dark ages where nobody had more than one TV. So I knew who Jim was. And I also, through just working in the cancer research community for a couple of decades, knew the work of the V Foundation. I also knew many of the scientists and doctors who are on the scientific advisory committee. And so when the search firm contacted me about the opportunity, of course, I picked up the phone and called them and said, what do you think? It looks good to me. And it led to, fortunately, me joining the organization. As I did the research to find out more about what the V Foundation does and how they do it, I was real impressed with what I found. I'm a stickler for good governance, and one of the first things I was able to do was go through tax returns and go through governance documents and see just how well governed the V Foundation had always been, and I'm happy to say it still is. And I was able to recognize the value of the pledge that 100 cents on every donor's dollar goes into research. And that impressed me a lot. And also, I love being able to work with something that is growing, that is a little bit of a diamond in the rough. And that's how I saw the V Foundation 8 years ago, as a small but powerful organization with a lot of upside potential, and in doing the right thing, doing it the right way. And gee, it's a no-brainer.
And Susan, you mentioned it being a small but powerful organization. I think still to this day, a lot of people don't realize that while the organization has grown certainly a lot since you took over, it's still a relatively small organization that has a lot of oomph behind it. I think sometimes that can get lost to certain people who aren't, you know, behind the scenes and seeing the day to day.
You are exactly right. I mean, we are lean, and well, we're not really mean, but we are very, very strong. And we have a large board of directors by all standards. There are 39 members of the V Foundation board. And so up until recently, very recently, the board was larger than the staff. And then if you combine the board with the scientific advisory board, they are still larger together than our staff is. And that means we have a lot of volunteer energy and expertise that goes into guiding the work of the V Foundation and doing the work of the V Foundation. And that inspires me too. So yes, we are a small staff, and we spend very little money on overhead and none of our donors' money on overhead, which is I think, another good sign.
Definitely. And I know just working with you guys, the passion is just palpable constantly about raising money for cancer research, which is just such an amazing thing to be a part of. But I'd love to hear about how, since you took over as CEO, how have you seen the V Foundation change over the years?
Well, one of the things we've been able to do in the last almost eight years is to engage in some new fundraising platforms, expand some of those that we have, get more engaged with our donor database, spend more time with individual donors, create new events like our Victory Ride to Cure Cancer. So there have been those changes. And also, perhaps more important than anything, we have been able to put that money to very good use through our grant program. It's fascinating to me how so often when people look at a nonprofit, they think about, oh, that's how they raise funds. We are as equally focused on great grant making as we are on great fundraising. And so an equal part of our energy is devoted to soliciting applications from the NCI designated cancer centers around the country, and then having those reviewed by experts, and then having them rated and then ranked according to their ratings. And then we pick the best among them. So we have a very good process for picking where the money will go. And, you know, we fund in all cancer areas. And we also fund a lot of basic research that helps us answer some of those most fundamental questions about who gets cancer, why they get cancer, where it comes from, how it acts in a test tube, how it acts in the human body the same way or differently. And then what can we use this for to either diagnose or treat or prevent cancer as broadly as we possibly can?
Susan, I'm glad you mentioned the grant, the funding process, because I'm not sure people understand really how competitive it is. And these, you know, these researchers from across the country are really working so hard to be the best of the best to be able to qualify and get these grants from the V Foundation. And it's quite a process. If someone's getting a grant from the V Foundation, you know they really are the top of the line.
That's really true, Mick. And we hear that from cancer center directors all the time, how prestigious the V Foundation grants are considered to be. And, you know, our V scholars are the young investigators, and I have such a special place in my heart for them because it is incredible to get to know them and to hear about their work and see what it is that they are projecting out into the future. And then also to look back at former V scholars and see the amazing things that they have accomplished in their careers. So they are the best and the brightest. These are important awards for them, both for starting their labs, for making their research grow, and eventually for those big career opportunities that we want for them to have, because we want to keep the best and the brightest in the field of cancer research, because that's what's going to help us find those answers that will save lives.
And I wonder too, Susan, you mentioned obviously the vSCHOLAR program is very important. It really gets those researchers going off the ground. But you mentioned some different programs and initiatives that the V Foundation is currently working on. Is there one that sticks out to you as something that you are very excited about or over the moon about or that you can't wait to tell people about when you're talking about it?
Well, there are lots of those, but one of my very favorites is canine comparative oncology.
I love this one.
You know, everybody who knows me well knows about this. So this will have to be for an audience that has never talked to me. One of the things that is fascinating to me is that over the last decade in particular, and this research has been around a little longer than that, but it's becoming more relevant now as the dog genome or the canine genome has been able to be sequenced, and we're better understanding the kinds of molecular structures in the tumors that animals get. So let me back up. First of all, pet dogs, so these are the dogs that we have in our home and that breathe our air and drink our water and sleep in our beds. Our wonderful pet companion dogs get cancer at a very high rate. And of course, there are millions and millions and millions of dogs in this country. We also know that dogs' lifespan is about 1/7 ours. That's why they say every year in a dog's life is 7 years in a human life. Well, the progression of cancer in one of our pet dogs, and they get a lot of cancer, it moves at that same sevenfold rate. So that what we can learn from what a pet is going through with cancer, we learn in 1/7 the time that it takes us to learn it in humans. We also know that pet parents like me are very often quite willing to let their pet be on a clinical trial because these are trials that will hopefully help their pet get through the cancer that they're being treated for. And then we've got amazing, I didn't really know that in the veterinary world, there are medical oncologists and surgical oncologists and radiation oncologists and geneticists, all that just like there is in the human cancer world. Now, these people all have extraordinary medical training too, and they are treating patients, their canine patients, the dogs who are our pets, they are treating them very often with the same things that are used to treat a human for cancer. And a lot of times what we're talking about are similar cancers to ones that children get. So what we can learn from how these treatments work in dogs very often can be analogous to, or at a minimum, informative of what we might be able to do in humans, and vice versa. So humans can help with cancer treatments in dogs, and what we learn from treating our dogs for cancer can help us better understand and more quickly understand how we can better take care of the cancer so we can devise treatments more quickly, so we can look at how a combination, say, of chemotherapy with an immunotherapy works. And we can find that out a lot more quickly because of this shorter lifespan, condensed lifespan, really, that a dog has. And then there is this wonderful cadre of medical professionals who are doing exquisite research that translates very often, not always, but very often it translates into very important information for what we know in human cancer. And again, back from human cancer to canine cancer. So it is an amazing field. What we found is that there are already some programs in place, and others are growing quickly, where a veterinary medical school is teamed up with a human cancer center to do these kinds of research that are called comparative oncology. And we are now working with a consortium of six pair of medical veterinary schools that are cancer centers within the veterinary world and the human cancer centers that are their partner to be able to field more research in the hope and with the belief that we are going to be able to learn things more quickly and perhaps less expensively, and really that will help us with both our wonderful pets and with humans, because all of us can use that help.
Absolutely. Susan, I'm so glad you brought up that program. Being a dog owner myself, it's comforting to know that there's so much research going on, and the fact that the V Foundation is really driving that research forward is just such a great thing. So I'm so glad you brought that program up. And it's something that I'm sure years ago, this wouldn't have even been a thought in anyone's mind. So thinking about the fact that cancer research is, you know, you always have to look towards the future. What is the next thing that we can do? So what would you say is the future of cancer research now?
Well, we all know, I believe, that immunology is teaching us a great deal about how cancer acts in the body, the human body, and the canine, but and how it might be able to be controlled. So I think we're going to see a lot more, not only in treatments, but also in vaccines, which are increasingly being developed for certain forms of cancer. So that's a hot area of research that I think we will understand more and more. I think the interaction between our genetics and exposures, environmental exposures, is something we will be able to understand better in the future. And one of the things that is sort of an underlying trend that has made cancer research both more robust in a lot of ways and also allowed us to open our minds about the kinds of questions we might be able to answer is the availability of platforms to analyze a lot of data at the same time or in a very short order. So that's, you know, everyone has heard about big data. And we are also beginning a program where we are going to be helping train cancer physicians to better utilize big data platforms to be able to understand the computational biology and the mathematical modeling that are needed for these huge projects. Because if you look at just how many bits of information there are in a single human's genome, and then you compare that against all of the possibilities of outcomes, you can already just envision the swarms of data that are around us that could be quite useful. So learning how to tame them and put that information into usable knowledge is a huge part of the future. And I think we will find it to lead us to findings that we could not have imagined before.
And if that's the future, Susan, the way you lay it out, what we always talk about here at the V Foundation, as you well know, is we want to achieve victory over cancer. So what does victory over cancer mean or look like to you?
Well, I'm going to actually look at it through a couple of different lenses, Mick, because for a person who's been diagnosed and maybe has metastatic disease, or that means the cancer has spread to other parts of the body, victory might mean living an extra 6 months, and that is an important victory. For some people, victory means I have cancer, the treatment worked, I'm 5 years now cancer-free or 10 years cancer-free or, you know, really not likely to ever get this cancer again. To me, ultimately, victory is people never having to be diagnosed with cancer. Finding a way to prevent cancer so that no one has to go through this process. So there are different ways to look at what victory is. There are different kinds of victory in the pathway of cancer. But ultimately, you know, we just want to have it wiped out. And as I like to say, we would be happy to go out of business. We will find something else to do.
And I know everyone in the organization would follow you to whatever was going on next, Susan. I know that. That is all the time we have with you today. Susan, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us and sharing your story with everyone on the podcast today.
Well, it's a pleasure, Mick and Samantha. Thank you both for doing this. I think it's going to share a lot of important information with folks out there.
Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in and helping us achieve victory over cancer. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get yours, so you can get updates when a new episode is posted.
And for more information about the V Foundation, visit v.org or follow us on social media at the V Foundation.
Until next time.
To me, there are three things we all should do every day. If we do this every day of our life, you're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day.